Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 15, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, text number 14. Aham Vaishnava Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashritya Pranapana Samayukta Pachamyanam Chaturvidam Aham, I, Vaishvanara, my plenary portion as a digesting fire, Bhutva, becoming, Praninam, of all living entities, Deham, in the bodies, Ashritya, situated, Prana, the outgoing air. Praapana, the downgoing air. Samayukta, keeping in balance. Pachami, I digest. Anam, foodstuff. Chaturvidam, the four kinds. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuff. Purport. According to Ayurvedic Shastra, we understand that there's a fire in the stomach which digests all food sent there. When the fire is not blazing, there is no hunger. And when the fire is in order, we become hungry. Sometimes, when the fire is not going nicely, treatment is required. In any case, this fire is representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedic mantras, Brihat Aranya Upanishad, also confirm that the Supreme Lord of Brahman is situated in the form of fire within the stomach, is digesting all kinds of foodstuff. I am Agnira Vaishvarnaro Yoyam Anantak Purushe Yidnedam Anam Pachite. Therefore, since he is helping the digestion of all kinds of foodstuff, the living entity is not independent in the eating process. Thus, the Supreme Lord helps him in digesting. There is no possibility of eating. He thus produces and digests foodstuff, and by his grace we are enjoying life. Vedanta Sutra 1.2.27 is also confirmed. Shabda dibyo nan shabdo dibyontak pratishtanachcha. The Lord is situated within sound and within the body, within the air, and even within the stomach as the digestive fire. There are four kinds of foodstuff, which are swallowed, some are chewed, some are licked up, and some are sucked, and he is the digestive force for all of them. Aham Vaishmaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashitya Pranapana Samayukta Pachamyanam Chaturvidam. I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuff. Veda means knowledge, and Ayu means life. So Ayu, or Ayurveda, is the science of life, as opposed to antibiotics, for instance. Anti means against, and biotics means life. So against life. So choose your science. Now, Ayurveda is based upon certain basic principles, which are observable. They're not some kind of mysterious science that you can't figure out. It's actually so simple that if someone is simple, they can immediately understand that it's perfect. That there are different energies that we're perceiving already. Ayurveda is not talking about something, some germ that comes along and hits you and you were an innocent person walking down one day, and some germ hit, you know, got you at the corner and molested you. You don't know why, just an innocent person, you know, innocent as a newborn lamb. I just got mercilessly attacked by this vicious germ because he didn't like the way you looked. Ayurveda is a little bit more straightforward. There are different, basically, Ayurveda is like any other part of Veda. It's a language. In other words, language is meant to convey something so that you can do something practical. So Ayurveda is put into a language which is applicable. We can do something specifically for health or life. And the basic principle is that they define the endless varieties of energies into five basic principles. Scientists, they divide the energies into different elements, so-called elements, such as, you know, carbon and sulfur and uranium, plutonium. But this is more something that you could work with. I don't think anyone knows how many elements are there in the current chart, elemental chart. There's probably at least 100. You can't even work, they don't work with them. There's nothing, they just name them, so they feel good that we've named them. H2O. We know what it is now. We know the words, we don't know what actually it is. For instance, now even the scientists, they know that water has intelligence. That water takes on the intelligence of what it associates with. So if water is in contact with something pleasant, it also becomes pleasant. And if water is like plants, if you play rock music to a plant, gradually it'll wither and die. If you play spiritual music to the plant, then it actually grows faster and bigger, healthier. So water is like that too. Water will take the properties of what it associates with. If you say something bad to the water, it will actually get contaminated. And if you think nice thoughts to the water, then the water will actually become energized more. So there are different energies, and one of the energies is not so much defining, like when we say earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhumir apunlo vayu kamuno bud eva cha ahankara itima yame bina prakriti ashita. He's not referring to our conception of earth. Otherwise people think it's very primitive. Oh, Krishna, you see everything is just earth, water, fire, you know. But actually, earth means something that's solid. Everything that's solid is earth. And has certain properties, such as earth has a property that the other elements doesn't have, namely smell. You can't smell, for instance, the next element, which is water, unless water has something in it. So what you're actually smelling in the water is the earth that's in it. And water has a property of keeping things together, cohesion. So that's another thing. On the subtle platform, it's called love. It keeps things together in the material world. And on the gross platform, it keeps things together. Like, for instance, this chair, if it was just earth, it would just fall apart. But there's water in it. And there's also, for instance, fire. Fire transforms things. So there's also fire. Otherwise, if we touch this, my hand would stick to it. It was so cold. So there's fire in the wood. There's also sound, ether, air, because we can hear it when I hit on it. So water is that keeps things together. Earth is things that stabilize things, give them form. Water is the form that keeps things together. Fire is the form that is the energy that transforms things. Air is the energy that moves things. And ether is the container for which everything is contained in. And mind is the conception of how we feel things. It gives feeling. And intelligence directs things. And ego gives identification. So these are the energies that are in the material world, and they have practical application. For instance, in our body, as it's mentioned in this verse, we have fire. But if fire was just by itself, then the body would just burn up. Sometimes that happens. People spontaneously combust because fire becomes out of balance with the rest of the elements in the body. The person just catches on fire and turns into ashes in a few minutes. But there's another energy in the body which is called water. So when you have fire and water together, generally either the fire puts out the water, or the water puts out the fire, or the fire puts out, makes the water into steam. You don't find in the material world, generally speaking, fire and water living compatibly with each other. Either one dominates and then eliminates the other, or the other dominates and eliminates the other. But in the body, if that happened, there couldn't be light. No one could live in the body. So there is an energy called pitta, which is a subtle energy which keeps fire and water in balance. So in our stomach, there is acidity in water. There's fire in water. It's called acid. And that energy that keeps them in balance is called pitta. Now, when there's too much fire, there's in Ayurveda, fire is the basic principle of existence. Because without transformation, then you can't get energy. In other words, the body has to work with some kind of energy. So that energy that keeps the body going is achieved through transformation. And there's varieties of transformation. And it doesn't actually begin in the stomach, it begins in the mouth. There's ptyalin and different types of, as soon as the tongue touches the food, of course if the tongue touched the food without the mucus, without the water in the mouth, which comes in varieties also of ptyalin and other kinds of saliva, we call it, which is actually also fire and water, we couldn't taste anything. When the tongue is dry, we can't taste anything. And most of the energy we get from taste, from chewing the food and tasting it, is has a variety of functions. One is that as soon as the tongue touches it, we find out what the taste is, according to a more complicated system, but the elements that the food has. Earth and water create sweet taste. Earth and air creates what's called astringent taste. Fire and water create, what's that? Where do we find the most salt in this planet? In the sea. And what is so, fire plus what is salt? Salt, as I just said. So fire and water is salt. Fire and what would make sour? We only have a couple of sour and fire and air. Fire and air is pungent. So what's left? You either have earth. Yes. Earth, water, fire, air. Earth, water, fire, air and ether. So it must be earth. The and fire, well, see, water plus air is equal to what? Bitter is the most subtle of all the elements. Well, bitter is the most airy. So air plus what would make bitter? Oh, that's a little more complicated. And what's that? Ether, that's right. Air and ether make bitter. And then we have astringent is earth and fire, earth and water, and then we have astringent, sour, salty, pungent, astringent, and bitter. So that makes all the so the tongue tastes it, and immediately it sends. When the brain can figure out what the taste is, then it sends what the elements are. Then it sends a message to the stomach to put that kind of juice into the stomach. That type of digestive fire, juice. And the right amount of air, is there, it's already in the stomach. And if we don't eat too much, then the stomach can figure out what's coming, because the brain can figure out what you just ate. If we chew it, and it's pre-digested, if we chew it enough, then the brain gets the intelligence, what's coming to the stomach, and prepares the right amount and the right kind of digestive enzymes. And if we leave enough room for the air to circulate in the stomach, because fire always requires air. So if there's too much food in the stomach and there's no air, then it's indigestible. And if we don't chew the food, then the stomach doesn't know what kind of digestive fluid to put into the stomach, and therefore it becomes indigestible. And if we keep on doing it long enough, the place where the sacrifice is going on, namely the stomach, becomes out of, because the stomach is only as big as two palms. That's the size of our stomach. But if you keep on expanding it, then after a while, it doesn't work anymore like it used to. And so things go into the stomach, and the body can't create enough digestive juice. The pancreas wears out, you get diabetes. Big stomach, no fire. So you keep on putting more things into it, but there's not enough fire to burn it. So it gets more and more clogged up as time goes on. So you need a place for the sacrifice. You need the right amount of fire. You need the right amount of air, and then you could have digestion going on. So Krishna may have arranged everything perfectly, but then again, Krishna says, one who doesn't eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little, one who has temperance habits of eating, sleeping, work, and recreation can mitigate the pains arising from the yoga, from material contact. So there's a whole science. How much to eat, what the properties of food are, what the current state of the atmosphere, of the weather is, what the current state of our age is, what the current state of our health is, what the current state of our digestive system is, where it's working, where it's not working, because there are actually many different fires in the body, not only in the stomach, in the mouth, in the small intestine, and every layer there is a fire which is produced in the liver. There are fires. There are fires for the, what's called the rasa dhatu, the lymph. There's a fire for the blood. There's a fire for the muscles. There's a fire for the fat. There's a fire for the bones. There's a fire for the bone marrow. There's fire for the reproductive system. There's fires on all those levels that transform one kind of bodily system to the next. And they all require suitable fire, a suitable amount of air, a suitable amount of structure to perform properly. And when they don't, there are symptoms. For instance, the most obvious symptoms, when you eat too much and you get mucus, and then you blame it on the food, like milk. You think milk produces mucus. But milk doesn't produce mucus. Indigestion produces mucus. Milk, if it's digested, produces brains. And when it's undigested, anything that's undigested produces mucus. That's a sign of indigestion. So we blame it on the food, but actually it's we take too much or too little. We take the wrong thing in the wrong combination, and it becomes indigestible, and it comes back to us as a waste product. Anyhow, it's a science. Ayurveda is quite a science. You can spend many lifetimes studying it. And in such a way as you can, more or less, you can find out people's state of health. You can even figure out when they're going to die to a certain extent. If you're expert. I mean, especially if they're going to die soon, you can figure it out by symptoms. I know one Ayurvedic doctor I used to go to. His name was Triguna. I went to him 40 years or something. And he saw around, when I last saw him, he left his body around 100, maybe 105 or something. And his son was sitting there all the time with him after some time. And he saw around 1,000 patients a day. And he just go up to him. They let us go there. Otherwise, you had to wait for 1,000 people. It would take a long time. But he just take your pulse, and 5 seconds later, he give you a whole diagnosis, and just write a recipe in the next one. Actually, I can tell my post now. And he learned it. One of the devotees asked him, you know, how did you learn to take pulse like that? He said, well, when I started out, because he practiced, he came from a family of Ayurvedic doctors from a line. So he probably started out when he was maybe 10 years old or 15 years old. He practiced for almost 100 years. So he said, when we were practicing, like they'd have a cholera epidemic in Delhi. So we'd see, like, you know, every day we'd see 100 cholera patients. So we'd take their pulse and we'd find out what the cholera pulse was. And then we'd have a malaria epidemic. And then we'd just take their pulse and find out what the pulse of malaria. So after, you know, decades of doing that, you just take a pulse and you understood, because, you know, just take the pulse and feel, you know, vata, pitta, and kapha. And then there's at least 3 layers of taking pulse. And there's 9 different, you can take a pulse for each one of the organs. And after a while, with the combinations, you can find out what's wrong with the person. And it becomes very, very subtle. And the brain immediately picks up on all the different nuances. It's like if you're learning how to play an instrument. After a while, it just becomes automatic. You don't have to think about it. So you just take pulse for 100 years, and yes, that's it. He was real. I knew others who were even better than that. I don't know if they were better. They weren't seeing 1,000 a day, so, or more sometimes. But they could tell you more, because they had a little bit more time. Like what happened to you at this age and what happened to you at that age. So it's a science. And if one learns a science, he can do pretty good. Because nowadays, anyhow, it's a whole conversation. I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned the stomach, if we eat too much, that it starts to expand.
Yeah.
And is there any way that we can put it,
get it back?
Normal, yeah.
Or less. It depends, you know. I don't know if the stomach is exactly like a rubber balloon that you expand it, and then you let the air out, it comes back the way it was. But it'll get better.
In the long run.
Yeah, it does shrink. Everything in the body, kind of adjusts itself. But if you spend, 50 years just expanding your stomach, you fast for a couple of days and think it's going to just come all the way back. It doesn't work like that.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have a question. If we will be nice devotees of Krishna and do everything what he says in Bhagavad Gita, will our health be better?
Not necessarily. Everything in the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, if you do everything he says in Bhagavad Gita. But health is still, there are devotees who are not so healthy, like Vasudev, the leper. He was a great devotee, but he wasn't necessarily healthy. So there may be more factors. If you think I'll follow the Bhagavad Gita, I can eat as much as I want, do whatever I want, I'll still be healthy. It doesn't work like that. There are other factors that go into it too. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna, I heard that along with the digestive fire, there is also a mental fire, if you could say.
Yeah, of course, it's intelligence. Intelligence is tejas, is our mental fire. Well, it's the fire. The mind is more or less receptive, and the intelligence is what directs the mind and digests thoughts. So there's fire in the mind also, which has to digest the thought. It's usually done with the help of intelligence. Because if the thoughts can't be digested, then either we store them away somewhere, it's called repression, and they just bother us subtly, or we keep on thinking about them again and again and again and go crazy. So the thoughts have to be filed away appropriately, but with intelligence. Vata is also a vata for bringing the thoughts into the storage place and then retrieving them and then digesting them. So in every level there's air to bring to move things. So thoughts have to also be moved with air, subtle air. They have to be digested with subtle fire. They have to be stored away somewhere. There has to be a storage place for them. So that's called kapha, pitta, and vata on a subtle level. So how to digest thoughts? The only way ultimately to digest our thoughts is to see things in relation to Krishna, or else we'll never be able to digest things. We'll never because you have to be, to actually have full digestion, you have to be in love. Love is the only thing that's is satisfying ultimately, and therefore the thought that actually can satisfy everyone. Without that, everyone's dissatisfied, so that the thoughts can never be completely digested. Yes.
Is it enough just to follow the general Ayurvedic tips, or you need to follow also the diet of our dosha type, or
if you want to be healthier, you have to understand there's more than just diet. There's exercise. Exercise. Basically speaking, there are certain basic principles you have to follow. For a devotee, the most essential things are. Our diet is prasadam, and our medicine is the Hare Krishna mantra. That's the easiest thing. And as far as food goes, from the other point of view, anything that we can digest is called food. Anything we can't digest is called poison, and anything that helps us digest the food is called medicine. So there's certain basic principles we should understand. But the most important thing for us is we should chew our food and eat in Krishna consciousness. That's not the only principle, like how we walk, how we sit, how we think, how we breathe. All these things will be. But you can be sure, no matter how perfect you become, you're not going to live forever around here. Too many other factors. But we can be healthier. The better we learn how to eat, especially, we learn how to see what to eat and how to eat it, when to eat it. That's and then even more important than that is what to think about. Not only while we're eating, but all the time, because we're always digesting. Everything we look at, we're digesting. Without digesting, we can't see. So there's digesting going on in the eyes. So depending on what we're looking at, if we're looking at Krishna, then our digestion will probably go better. And if we're looking at other things, it can disturb all the three doshas just by looking at something. So we have to learn what to look at, how to look at things, what to think about, how to smell things, and everything has to be there. It's not just, but eating is... It all usually culminates in eating. If we get into anxiety, then we usually eat too much or eat too little, or we don't chew our food, or we don't taste it, whatever. So eating is a very important thing. The body's subtle digestion is important from seeing things, but nothing is harder in the body usually than trying to digest food. It requires a tremendous amount of the body's capacity to do that. And even water. Yes?
You were saying how you sit, how you walk, how you talk, all these things. But I was wondering, you were also saying we have to chew, we have to do this, we have to do this, we have to control everything. But I was wondering how much are we binded by guna and karma, because Krishna says Daivi Hesha Guna Mai Mama Maya Duratea. So, and also another verse is Ahankara Vimudat Makarta Hamiti Manyate. So how much can we actually do? Because you said you have to do this, you have to change how you eat, yeah, how you chew, but we are not the doers.
Well, we are the doer, we're the desirer. We're not innocent victims of the material energy. We've gotten a body, and we can't change the body we have, but we can change what we're going to do with the body. So that just like you're going to, after this class, and you sit down to eat, your teeth are not moving up and down automatically. You can make a decision that I want to choose my food now. I'm going to try to taste it. So that will make a big difference in your health the next day. You can just swallow, you can take your food and just swallow it and see what happens. Or you can sit there and meditate on Krishna and chew your food. Then you can see practically what happens. It's our choice. We're not helpless victims. If we hear the right knowledge and we apply it, then we get one result. If we have no knowledge, we get a different result. Now we've gotten this body because of what we've done in the past, and we'll get our next body according to what we're doing now. So obviously we can change what we're doing now because we decide what our next body is going to be, more or less, to some extent. So that's why we hear knowledge, and that's why we try to understand it, try to understand how to apply it. When we apply it, then we'll get one result, and we don't hear that knowledge, we'll hear something else, and we'll apply that. So what we hear and what we understand and what we apply depends upon us. That's our free will. Is that clear? I mean, just the basic.
It will take some time.
Well, did you eat anything today?
Not yet.
You haven't eaten anything today. Are you going to eat anything today?
No, I eat in the evening.
In the evening. So, if you think about chewing your food more, do you think that will make a difference?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh, so.
I agree with this.
Yeah, so. Try it. And then, otherwise, if you, no one reminded us about it, we may not think about it very much. So we take it as something to apply within our lives, and we can see the difference. Something simple like that. Anything else? Yes.
Do you recommend any book which talks about basic principles of Ayurveda?
One good book is called Prakriti by Robert Svoboda. It's best for Westerners. Simple. That's the best. Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj, Mad Bhagavad Gita, Kijai.